Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Serie A fan. Our favourite Maverick is at it again. Spalletti riles up the ultras, sarcastically plots his way to a red card, and ultimately keeps Napoli at the top of the table. But Milan draw level on points as they face a showdown in the capital against Muz Roma. We'll speak about that, and all the rest of this week's action, in this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to Scudetto. It's just Boaz and myself again this week for the third week running. We've come up with weird and wonderful reasons for what Oscar's up to. The truth is that he's moving country, and the absolute truth is that, as if this is the 1920s or something, rather than doing what normal people do, which is getting on a plane with some suitcases and shipping your stuff across, he is actually on a ship as we record. On his way from Finland to, I think he said, to Sweden before then, making his way onto the UK. Anyway, crazy times. Boaz, you are with us, obviously. How are you doing?
Just about. I'm doing fine, Kenny. Not too bad, although the clocks are moving backwards this weekend in Israel. And I don't know if you know much about having young kids, but...
I know a thing or two.
our boy tends to wake up too early to begin with, and now it's going to be an hour earlier, so it's going to be an exciting few weeks.
I think you get an extra hour in bed, I think, actually.
But he's still going to be waking up at the same time.
Right,
yes,
that makes sense.
While it's going to be later, he's going to be waking up.
You're right.
An hour earlier. Yeah, it's not going to be great for a few weeks.
Oh, yeah. Good luck. Good luck with that. Have you got a beer to drown your sorrows at the thought of that?
I'm drinking a Malka Pale Ale today, which I believe I've had in the past.
You have indeed. Obviously a favourite of yours. I've also got a favourite of mine here. I've got a Brewdog Hazy Jane, which is delicious.
Like
delicious as always. Right, okay, so loads and loads to get through, and we say that all the time, but two match weeks, and obviously the previews of this upcoming one to get through. We've mentioned in a few of the recent episodes that we have to give Napoli their dues and speak about them in depth, given that they're probably looking like favourites for the Scudetto at the moment alongside Milan. So they obviously dropped their first points of the season, 0-0 against Roma at the weekend, but bounced back with a 3-0 midweek win against Bologna. Boaz, let's start this off by just asking, I mean, they look so impressive. Is the African Cup of Nations the only thing that can stop Napoli being considered outright favourites for the Scudetto?
It's certainly something that's been earmarked in the calendars and something that could definitely derail this fantastic season so far. But I think Napoli have shown that they're a very solid team. And of course, the four players who will be potentially going to the African Cup of Nations are pretty much the backbone of the team.
Yeah.
But I think the way Napoli are playing, and of course the mentality that Spalletti has managed to set up there, suggests to me that perhaps this is much ado about nothing, particularly considering that some key players for some other clubs will also be going for the African Cup of Nations. Not as many as Napoli, but still. I think Napoli have been definitely the most impressive team thus far this season, not just because of the football shown, but also because there's a noticeable improvement on last year. And lastly, something that we keep mentioning is that Spalletti's only been in the job for about half a year, and it usually takes time for players to adapt to a new style of football, a new manager, but it's been almost instant there. And you can tell that the players have really bought into his ways, not least the captain Insigne, who sometimes seems like he's off, sometimes looks like he's staying, but he's still giving it all for his boyhood club. So well done to Spalletti, and I think, as I keep saying, he's a strange man, but he's also one of the he's one of the most underrated managers in Europe, in my mind, and probably of the current managers in who are managing in Italy. I think he's probably the best tactician at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, he's doing an incredible job there. I would say that any team, yes, other clubs will be losing players to the African Cup of Nations, but arguably one of the best centre backs in the league, Koulibaly, will be away for them, and I think we have to say the best striker in the league, Osimhen, as well.
So. Yeah, Osimhen is an alien, and I think Sinisa Mihailovic's reaction post game suggested that he was even more impressed than what he was expecting. Considering Osimhen is only 21, I believe, as well, there's so much promise ahead of him. Mihailovic, just to quote him, he called him ignorante, which it doesn't quite translate as ignorant as you would think, but kind of strong-headed, a guy who will do anything. And he said he just keeps running. He's got a powerful shot. He's a very smart player. So when your opposing manager gives you such praise, there has to be something there. You mentioned Koulibaly and Osimhen, but I think perhaps Anguissa will be most missed because absolutely. He's been such a revelation. Transferring to the Premier League just for a second, there's a few clubs in the top six over there who could have probably done with a player like this, not least Man United, who seem to lack any sort of defensive midfielder. And it's kind of a coup that Napoli were able to grab him, and for such small money. I think the buyback clause is 15 million, which is not too prohibitive. But of course, the likes of Arsenal, even Liverpool, are apparently circling now. So Napoli will do well to tie this deal up, because he's been, as I said, he's been a revelation.
Yeah, and he was immense as well in that game against Bologna as well. But I mean, before we get into the Bologna game, you mentioned Mihailovic's press conference post-game. Can we talk a little bit about the pre-game press conference, in which he, I don't really know how you could describe this other than saying that he absolutely bullied a teenager, Aaron Hickey, in front of all of the gaze of the media. What did you make of that?
As I've given Sinisa honorables in the past for his behavior and his quotes in press conferences, and this was very close as well. He asked Hickey to pronounce a few words in a Scottish accent and then lightly mocked him for it. And then he suggested that he would be the starting left back for Scotland, to which Hickey reminded him that there was a certain Robertson and Tierney ahead of him. And Sinisa was just like, who are they? Where are they playing? So lols all around. Although I think maybe Sinisa was deflecting a little bit from the fact that in both the game against Milan, which we'll get to, and in this game against Napoli, Bologna pretty much hit the self-destruct button, both by giving away the silly ball in the first goal and also giving away two penalties, which is kind of criminal. Of note on those two penalties is that after Insigne had missed two penalties in a row, Spalletti said that, you don't want Insigne to take penalties anymore, then the next penalties will be taken by either the captain or Lorenzo. And of course, in this case, both the captain and Lorenzo got the goals. So credit where credit is due, but Bologna they're self-destructing, as I said, and they should do better. In this game in particular, it was over before the first 15-20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of felt like at the beginning it was it looked like it had the makings of an entertaining game, but I mean, yeah, after Napoli took the lead, really, I mean, Bologna really didn't create that much, did they? And I don't even think Napoli had to really do much. As you said, there were two absolute gifts of penalties. And I think Mihailovic complained after the game as well, didn't he? He said, oh, two penalties in this game, two red cards in the previous game. What are we supposed to do? But I mean, those were two blatant penalties. So.
I'm not sure he was complaining so much about the decisions, but more lamenting his own bad luck, or the fact that it's much harder for a team like Bologna to overcome the top teams in the league when they keep shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
In Sinisa's defense, he also said that Soriano's red card was completely justified, although he did see he had some questions about the first red card in the Milan game, which I think is fair. So again, maybe Bologna aren't showing too much character on the pitch, But off the pitch, at least, Sinisa is putting his face to it.
Right. Well, next up for Napoli, it's Salernitana away. Salernitana, who came back from behind to beat Venezia, in part thanks to a questionable sending off decision against Ampedu. I don't want to veer too far off course, because we are still just kind of rounding up the Napoli game here. But a quick take on that, Boaz, because it was a talking point of the weekend. A red card for you?
I think definitely not a red card, although if when seen in slow motion, it's possible that the referee felt that for a split second Ampedu lost control of the ball and that his foot was a little bit, let's call it, hammered. But it was a bit of a ridiculous red card. And it's one of these situations that created some hoo-ha in Italy this week, because there was a few decisions that maybe shouldn't have gone to VAR that did go to VAR. And this decision here was, I don't think it was eligible for VAR, because it was a direct decision from the ref. But nonetheless, I think maybe something needs to change in this aspect, where some clear wrong decisions are being made. Having said that, just another boring VAR chat, but I think when VAR was introduced to football, I don't think anyone expected there to be 100% for it to be 100% fail-proof. I think it's there to limit the mistakes that are being made, and that's definitely something that's been happening. But there's a lot of penalties, for example, being given in Italy, a lot more than in the other top leagues. And it's often VAR that's given these. And there's also a whole debate about contact. Whereas, I mean, football is a contact sport. So I don't think, I mean, we'll get onto it. But the Dumfries penalty at Juventus, it's a penalty. But the discussion shouldn't be about whether there was contact or not, but it should be about whether he impeded him, stuff like that.
Yeah, there was talk of meaningful contact at a certain point, and that seems to have just completely disappeared, doesn't it?
I mean, all I personally ask for is a little bit of for the refs to have a set standard of what is a foul and what is not. Right now, you watch any game week in Italy, and there's ridiculous fouls that are getting away with yellow or not even the yellow. There's like some really marginal decisions that are deciding games. And ultimately, I hate to bring up the financial aspect of this, but there's a lot of money on the line. And to get relegated or miss out on a Champions League spot, or God forbid, lose the championship on a decision would be catastrophic.
Yeah, but obviously Salernitana were the beneficiaries in this case.
I think, you also asked me earlier if I think it was a red card. It was Ribery, right? I think he did a fantastic job at selling the fact that he was supposedly stamped on. So, I mean, he's got years of experience. So you have to love a good, it wasn't a dive, but a good exaggeration of impact.
Mm. And what do you reckon for Salernitana at the weekend? Any hope of taking anything off Napoli? Or is this train going to keep on running?
Salernitana have been getting a few odd good results here and there in the past few weeks, but ultimately, I think they're destined for relegation, and the way Napoli have been playing in the past few weeks has been immense, and I don't see Salernitana putting up too much of a barrier.
Yeah. So it would be nice to move on from refereeing controversy, but we're going to move on to Juve next. In particular, we're going to start by casting our minds back a week to the Derby d'Italia, where there was more refereeing controversy. Obviously, you've mentioned already the Dumfries penalty, Inzaghi raging at that and getting himself sent off. It was one of four managers at the weekend to get themselves sent off. But yeah, it felt at that point that the Allegri turnaround was still on track. They'd kind of got away with one. They'd done that Allegri thing of getting a result where they hadn't necessarily deserved it. And then obviously the Sassuolo will come on to next. But I'm keen to get your take on this. But for me, Inter kind of threw that game away. Boaz, no, they had it in control.
A little bit like the Lazio game, where they pretty much dominated possession and created a lot of good chances. Ultimately, for me, this is 2 points dropped by Inter rather than a point gained. And it's starting to become a pattern where they're losing points here and there in games where they're otherwise dominating. I don't think it was the greatest of games. I feel that, considering this was a game that was being broadcasted around the world, it was a little bit slow. there was a lot of mistakes in actions, and there could have been other goals from miskicked clearances and stuff like that. But ultimately, it was decided on a very late penalty scored by your good friend Dybala. I think Juve got away with one there.
They did get away with one, but I mean, it was a clear penalty, wasn't it? He kind of lashed at the ball, completely missed it, and I mean, it's clear. It's not even just contact. I mean, there's like force in the action. It is definitely the right decision in the end, if you ask me.
The controversy is that VAR called up the ref for this one, and in theory, as I said earlier, once the ref makes a decision, VAR should not contradict him. And according to certain players, the ref was heard saying that was not a foul. So the only explanation could be that the VAR asked him, what did you see? And he maybe felt that Dumfries was the one who was getting kicked, or that maybe he got the ball, at which point that is a clear and obvious error, and then VAR can intervene. But this goes back to what I said earlier. It's very strange that VAR can jump in for a situation like this, but it doesn't jump in for a case where Vinicius were clearly wrong done.
And there's been obviously a lot of talk about VAR and how it can be improved. I mean, that would be my thing, would be that big changes like this in the game, they never get them spot on, or very rarely do they get them spot on right from the beginning. One of the things that's been suggested in Italy is something which I've actually long been in favour of, which is sort of a challenge system for VAR, where each team gets a challenge, and if they get it right, they get to keep their challenge. If they get it wrong, then that's them lost their challenge. What's your take on that, Buzz? What's
a little bit
opinion?
Like tennis?
Yeah. And NFL as well.
I think, obviously, particularly in Italy, managers would find a way to game this challenge to waste time or something. But it's definitely a step forward from what's happening right now. And I think that, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on where you stand on the matter, VAR is here to stay. So now what we have to do, or rather what the people in power have to do, is get it to a place where it satisfies our need for the game not to be stop-start all the time, but also that there isn't any evident unfair advantage given to certain clubs.
Yeah. So Juve got away with one there anyway, and then...
Before we move on, I just wanted to spend a good word for Edin Dzeko, who scored against Juve.
Yeah.
And that was his seventh goal in nine league games, and also his fifth goal in the first four home games, equaling Marco Branca and Mauro Icardi, who, of course, banged lots of goals for Inter over the years. So that's good company to be in, and at 35 years of age, it's impressive. And I know it sounds a bit facetious, but swapping Lukaku for Edin Dzeko on a free and making so much money seems to have worked out fine for pretty much all parties involved.
Yeah, although perhaps Conte leaving Inter less so, perhaps. But anyway, Juve obviously got away with one there, as you said, but then had what looked like a relatively straightforward task. I mean, Sassuolo, we all know what they have been capable of in recent years. But still, Juventus at home against Sassuolo, you would expect them to come away with the 3 points. Obviously, that isn't the way it turned out. Juve found themselves behind to what we have to say is a very good Sassuolo opener, although if you're a Juve manager or a Juve fan, all too easy the way they were cut open for that. Managed to, after putting pressure on, managed to get themselves back on level terms, and then as they were pushing for the winner, got dealt a sucker blow at the end. And there was a great quote from Allegri at the end, which was just sheer frustration, where he said that you can't lose a goal at the end there, he said like chickens, but the way it's used in Italy, it's kind of more you can't lose a goal at the end like that, like donkeys, basically. But after that, I mean, we thought Juve were kind of had hit this stride, this Allegri kind of style. They go and they drop 3 points at home like that. They're now 13 points off Milan and Napoli, and actually, interestingly, 5 points worse off than they were under Pirlo at this time last season. Is that it, Boaz? Are Juve, I mean, obviously they still, Champions League qualification is still very much alive, but we're a quarter of the way into the season. They're 13 points behind. At what point do we say Juve are not title contenders?
A lot of references have been made to Allegri's 2015 campaign, where Juve were also 13 points off the top and ended up winning the league. In that case, there was a better squad, let's face it. The midfield was a phenomenal midfield. There were some fantastic strikers, and pretty much the same defense as today, but 6 or 7 years younger. So I think the Scudetto is gone for Juventus, although they may surprise us. But Champions League is still within reach. And Agnelli spoke to shareholders and fans this week, and he said that the club is budgeted well enough to not make the Champions League, which makes for a nice change from what he said before Allegri finished his first stint in charge, where he said that not finishing in the top four would be a disaster and would not be worthy of a club like Juve.
Yeah. And next up for Juve, it's Tudor's rejuvenated Verona, who, let's not forget, at the weekend, so much has happened, but at the weekend they beat Lazio 4-1. So, I mean, that's not...
With four goals from Simeone.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not going to be easy for them, is it? It could be that it gets worse.
In a normal season, I would say that this was close to a guaranteed 3 points for Juventus, even with Pirlo or Sarri at the helm. But it's really an unpredictable season. And the way Juve are playing, they're just not creating enough chances. They've lost a guy who scored 20, 30 goals a season. And in theory, at least, according to everything that's being released by the club, the goals should now somehow be shared equally between Morata, Keane, even Locatelli from midfield. But realistically, that's not actually been happening. They've been scoring very few goals. They've been conceding more goals than they've conceded since 1995, I believe. So it's not it's far from your typecast Juventus performance. And I'm surprised. I didn't think it would be this bad. And I think this is probably the biggest challenge of Allegri's career.
Yeah. Inter, for their part, after the Derby d'Italia, went on to overcome Empoli away 2-0 in another game with controversy. I mean, Empoli had Ricci sent off, probably fairly. It was a very rash challenge. But then really should have been awarded a penalty themselves as well. But ultimately, Inter, once Empoli were down to 10 men, very comfortable for Inter. There was only ever going to be one winner, really. And that kind of keeps them 7 points adrift. So they're still, you couldn't write Inter off yet, really, Buzz, could you?
No, I think Inter is still in the picture, although particularly the draw against Juventus was, as I said, 2 points dropped and probably sees them a little bit further from the top two clubs than they would like to be.
Yeah, and across the city, city rivals Milan, your club, share top spot obviously with Napoli, and they actually appear to be overcoming that injury and COVID list that they had. Really, they've had a good week, back to back wins. Obviously, the 4-2 against Bologna that we spoke about, and the 1-0. Against Torino. I'm not sure if you want to speak a little bit about the Bologna game first.
The Bologna game was a mad game, with Bologna getting two red cards, as we mentioned earlier, and still managing to come back from 2-0 down to 2-2, with Milan only managing to go ahead again in the 80th minute or so with a fantastic Benacer shot. It was a bit of a weird game, and I particularly like Sinisa Mihajlovic throwing on a couple of attackers once they went 3-2 down, thus making it even more of a five-a-side game with Milan just booting the ball along to Milan players, basically. But yeah, it was, I think it's, as going back to what I said earlier, Bologna shot themselves in the foot, showed some fantastic spirit to come back, but perhaps they were aided a little bit by Milan getting a little bit too cocky and maybe pushing too far forward to get that third.
Yeah. But I mean, Milan found a way to win, and it's something they did in midweek as well against Torino. I have to say I didn't actually see the Torino game beyond the highlights, but certainly it seems to be from the reaction that I've heard that Torino were perhaps a bit unlucky not to take something from San Siro. Is that fair?
Firstly, if you have if any of our listeners have bouts of insomnia, I would strongly recommend watching this game over and over. It's a fantastic calmer for the nerves, but it wasn't a great spectacle. And I felt that Torino showed some really good football, but they were very toothless in the last third of the area. Particularly Belotti, who is coming back from an injury, but he looks—he doesn't look like a football player. He looks like someone who's won his appearance in a cereal packet or something. he's a little bit out of shape. He seems to be—he's really battling for everything, but he's far from the player that we know and love. But I think Milan got the early goal and then sat back. Maybe they gave Torino a couple of chances too many, particularly towards the end when Torino threw their keeper up for the corner, and the ball was just wide. But overall, it was far from a great performance for Milan in both games, actually. But kind of showed great spirit, and it showed that certain players who maybe haven't been playing as often as others have the skills to be in part of this squad. And it was nice to see Giroud score again. Maybe he's finally gonna remove this curse of the number 9 shirt that has been bugging the club since Inzaghi retired.
Yeah, certainly looks like it. I mean, Juric has definitely turned things around for Torino. I think it has to be said at the beginning of the season we're obviously a bit worried. They had the game against Atalanta where they were very unlucky to come away with nothing, but then disappointing performances after that. Juric being in the press, kind of complaining about loan signings and the like, and it kind of didn't look good. But things have steadied since then, and I would be surprised if they're anywhere near the relegation talk again this season.
Torino have seen themselves lose to the likes of Milan, Napoli in recent weeks. They also lost to Atalanta, as you mentioned. But these are all the top clubs, and probably Torino were not expected to win these games. What is important is ultimately, statistically, Torino have 5 more points than they had at this stage last season. And crucially, they've conceded 13 less goals. So the Juric imprint is definitely starting to show.
Yeah, those 5 points have moved across the city from last season with
Juve. Yeah, they were loaned over. And,
yeah. Yeah. Right, next up for Milan this weekend, it's one of the big games of the weekend, really. Roma-Milan. Roma, who themselves escaped from 1-0 down against Cagliari. We spoke about Roma getting being the first team to hold Napoli to a draw this season earlier on. But in midweek, they were 1-0 down against Cagliari. Could have been worse. Managed to turn things around by way of some, well, great goals, really. What are your thoughts going into this game? Has Mourinho kind of stopped the rot at Roma? I mean, it's two good or two encouraging results in a row. Do you have this as a tough game for Milan?
I think it's definitely going to be tough, particularly because it's away from home and because Mourinho has priors with Milan from his time at Inter. I wouldn't be surprised if this was quite a defensive match with perhaps a low score and probably a draw. But I'm not as confident as I've been in past games about how well we're going to do. Having said that, I'm not sure Mourinho has managed to stop the rot yet. I think the atmosphere that he's created at Roma is incendiary. And ultimately, while things are going well and while he has the backing of the Friedkins, it's all good. But I think ultimately when you publicly name and shame 5 or 6 of your squad players, it will somehow roll over onto the other players. And, you know, some people will think, wait, what's going to happen if I make a mistake or something like that? Is he going to throw me under the bus as well? So it's not the greatest in terms of man management.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's one area where an area that Milan can exploit, because as we mentioned, the team spirit at Milan appears to be really phenomenal, and there's such a great bond between the squad from the young players to the old players. It's something that I haven't seen at Milan for a long, long time. So in that aspect, perhaps the team spirit can pull Milan through, but I mean, Roma are a good team. That's not going to go away overnight because their second string lost to Bodø/Glimt.
Yeah, fair point. And Mourinho actually was doing some backpedaling as well, I think, this week, saying basically players that he had said he couldn't play again. Now he was saying, well, they don't have like crosses through their faces. They can get back into the setup. Anyway.
I think some of this is to do with the fact that the club wants to move some of these players on. And I think it's probably done with the... It's very theatrical, but I think it's done with the expressed agreement of the owners in a way to kind of try and push these guys off the plank. Mm. And I think some of them will go, but for example, Villar is not going quietly, and his social media presence recently has been quite incendiary. Yeah, he's been quite angry with what's going on. I think justifiably so. Last year, he was supposed to be the new great hope of the Roma midfield.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to move on, and we probably shouldn't spend too much time speaking about the other big game of this weekend, which is Atalanta-Lazio. The reason I say that is because it's obviously the earliest kickoff. So by the time a lot of our listeners listen to this episode, perhaps that game will be done and dusted. But Lazio, who in midweek overcame Fiorentina 1-0, was billed, I think, possibly as the biggest game of midweek. It was certainly, I think, the most glamorous if you looked at the table. I watched it, and it was pretty disappointing, to be honest. Fiorentina didn't really do too much. They had good possession, they had kind of good territory, but like I think you mentioned before about, I'm trying to remember who it was you were speaking about, but basically Fiorentina just didn't have any kind of bite, no cutting edge or anything. Atalanta, for their part, obviously very, very reasonable. 3 points away from home against Sampdoria in midweek. 3-1, perhaps a bit of a risultato bugiardo, as you would say, Boaz, because it was 2-1 up until the last minute. But I think good for Atalanta, having come from, you know, the weekend where they threw 2 points away in the closing stages against Udinese. So yeah, still a bit stop start from Atalanta. We said last week that we have to give Napoli a bit more time. Hopefully we'll be giving Atalanta more time in future episodes as one of the protagonists.
And of course, Gasperini was one of the managers sent off in the previous week that you mentioned. And he was particularly angry at the fact that the referees do not explain their decisions, apparently.
Yeah, and apparently voluntarily thinking about sitting this one out in the stands. His ban obviously is over, but he said that he's so fed up of getting booked and sent off that he might just sit in the stands for it.
The subject of getting managers getting sent off, I also, and it's going back to Napoli earlier on, but I very much enjoyed Spalletti getting sent off for the offensive, the ironic clap, which there's nothing worse in football. But Spalletti came up to the referee, complained for a few minutes about things that happened during the game, and then started clapping. But bravo anyways. And it was obviously very sarcastic, but then he acted really shocked that the red card came out. Perhaps like a sarcastic clapping deserves a yellow card, but not a red card. But this was a game where both managers were sent off, and Jose Mourinho was seen, he wasn't allowed into the stadium at Cagliari, so he was seen eating food on the steps outside.
He shared it on his social media or something, didn't he?
Yeah, so I'm personally hoping that Mourinho sticks around Roma as long as possible, because his social media output has been fantastic.
Yeah, but quickly, Buzz, just to get your take on this game between Atalanta and Lazio in Bergamo. Atalanta's injury crisis in defence continues. Gimsiti, Palomino and Toloi. It seems like three out of four of the centre-backs are taking turns at sitting the weeks out, with one of them given the responsibility for all of the rest of them. Do you think Lazio might be favourites going into this one?
It's really hard to get a pinpoint of where Lazio are right now, because while they have these phenomenal results where they win against Inter, or they beat Roma in the derby, they subsequently get smashed by Verona 4-1.
Yeah.
They've had some ridiculous drops in form, and with Atalanta coming at you with all cylinders, it might be hard for the Lazio defense to cope. And I think that Immobile has maybe not been as sharp as he has been in past seasons this year.
Yeah, that's fair.
Obviously, it didn't help that he was injured. So that's definitely a factor. But it's something that, as I said, this is one of the games that, well, every game that Lazio are playing right now is so hard for me to predict because they're so up and down. And it feels to me that maybe Sarri isn't 100% convinced about his starting 11 yet.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Definitely not found any consistency, really. Right, we do have to move on. We're going to move on to best of the rest. And just to start off, I guess, on a Lazio point, to keep it on Lazio, Luis Alberto's fallout with Sarri appears to have worsened to the point where he's now expected to be leaving in January, which is a shame because he obviously has been absolutely fantastic for them. But certainly he wasn't great in the midweek game. So
it seems strange that a manager like Sarri, who made his name at Napoli by playing spectacular brand of football, cannot find room for a player who is such a fantasista. But Luis Alberto is known for being quite a character off the pitch, and maybe that is a factor.
Yeah, a bit hot-headed. The other big story, really, this week that's broken in the last couple of days is that Fijici is opening an investigation into 62 transfer dealings over the last 2 years, in particular involving player exchanges with questions around valuations. And according to reports, it's deals with involving Napoli and Juve in particular that are under the microscope, although there must be a lot of other ones there. I don't think Napoli and Juve have made 62 transfers themselves in the last couple of years. Elsewhere, Italian media reporting that Juve are getting serious in their pursuit of Vlahovic, suggesting that they've even got so far as talking about potential salary. But obviously there's a 60 million euro asking price, and there's a certain Manchester City and Atletico Madrid as well, apparently, in the running for Vlahovic's signature. Genoa, apparently, on the brink of relieving Ballardini of his duties with Gattuso, Pirlo and Donadoni, one of those three favourites in the frame to replace him. And we'll move on to a few contract renewal bits now, with Insigne close to renewing with Napoli, according to reports. But he was asked about this in a press conference, and I think his response was, "You guys always think about the same thing, and I just think about playing. The president and my agent will deal with that." So you can read into that what you like.
It's the kind of thing you say while your agent is negotiating with another club.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's the thing. That's why I was saying he was apparently close, but I mean, that doesn't sound like it.
This comes off the back of his Insigne's agent being seen allegedly walking into both Inter and Milan's headquarters in recent months. Mm. So who knows what's on the agenda for the Euro 2020 winner.
Yeah, and Inter and Milan both had contract renewals to announce of their own this week. Lautaro Martinez renewing his contract with Inter until 2026. Dodged a bullet there by not ending up at Barcelona. And Chiar renewing with Milan until 2024. Right, it's time for Good Week, Bad Week, Buzz. Who do we have down as our favourites for Good Week?
I have to look at Sassuolo this week, not particularly because of that Juventus result, but also because the goal scored, although Juventus' defending was a little bit weak, were very pretty on the eye, and Sassuolo played football the right way despite having switched manager in the summer, so I can't look far from them.
Yeah, and obviously a victory against Venezia coming from behind as well. I think that's fair shot.
The other nominee would be Milan, but I think despite winning both games, they were a little bit weak, or at the very least didn't showcase the best form of football. So I'm happy to give it to Sassuolo.
Yeah, I reckon it's a good shout. I reckon Sassuolo is a good shout. And that result away in Turin, I think, has to kind of clinch it for them. Bad week is probably a bit more difficult. I mean, we obviously mentioned Venezia there. Not only did they throw away a lead against Sassuolo, but they were leading against Salernitana and lost, obviously, that sending off that we spoke about earlier, but also losing to a last minute goal. So personally, I'd have them down as one of the contenders. The other ones that we've got down are Cagliari, who lost against Fiorentina and Roma, and Bologna, who obviously lost those two games we spoke about, Milan and Napoli. Who do you, if you had to pick one of the three, who would be your nominee for bad week, Buzz?
I have to say I was very disappointed by Bologna in this week, but at the same time, as mentioned by Sinisa Mihailovic, there were some extenuating circumstances. Giving away two penalties, getting two players sent off in the same game doesn't help your chances of winning. I would probably put all my chips on Cagliari for this one. They don't seem to have benefited from the new manager bounce. They probably were right to complain about at least not getting a point against Roma. They hit the bar, and there was also a slightly controversial moment there where, again, VAR was not called up, was called up, etc., etc. But yeah. I think whereas with Venezia, there was the red card, and they were playing Sassuolo, who went on to beat Juve. So, you know, no shame in losing there. Whereas Cagliari really need to start digging themselves out of this hole. Let's not forget that they also started last season in awful fashion, and last year they were able to rescue it, but they keep doing this, eventually their luck will run dry.
Yeah, fair comment. I'm happy with Cagliari for bad week. Right, next up, it's your segment, Keeping Up with the Italians, Buzz. What have you got for us this week?
I've got written down here, there is a limit to every gimmick, and therefore I will not I will not bore our listeners with goals from the Polish second division and a bunch of Italians playing in Andorra. And there's a guy who plays for Italy who just signed for the Vietnamese league, former Italian under 21 star. But what
so long
I will
as
say
they've
is,
got something from Turkey, boys. That's all I'm really bothered about.
So I will keep it very short. We have Carlo Ancelotti winning the Clásico in Spain, and thus precipitating Ronald Koeman's sacking and making Barcelona's season look even worse than it already was. And I have our friend Mario Balotelli scoring a 97th minute penalty, which equalized the game, and of course celebrating like only Mario can.
There we go.
And that's my Turkish reference.
Nice one. Okay, right. Let's move on to the final segment, honorable and dishonorable mentions. I'm going to start off the honourables, and I've got one for Napoli's under-16s, who scored an outrageous Maradona-style handball from a corner to rescue a 2-2 draw away to Roma. And I think the real beauty of this is that it was obviously a Roma commentator who was doing the commentary, and he absolutely loses it. As soon as the ball goes in, he goes, "But that's a handball. That's a handball. No, I mean, his hand was up in the air. How can you miss that? This isn't volleyball." And just, like, goes off on one. But, yeah, absolutely glorious. It's the sort of thing you dream about as a kid, to score a goal like that and get away with it. So it's an honourable for me.
You're liking it to the hand of God, but the hand of God was quite smart about the way he hit it, whereas this was pretty much a volleyball smash. And then to add insult to injury, he celebrated like he scored a World Cup final goal. And I particularly enjoyed the Roma players outraged and screaming at the ref and running around incredulous.
Getting,
I mean,
bookings all round.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. Great to see. You love to see it. Boaz, you've got honourables for it's children news.
Yeah, arguably there's been too much reference to children in this episode so far, but here we are. We have Theo Hernandez, who is girlfriend announced that she's pregnant this week. So congratulations to them. And also Mertens, whose wife announced that they're expecting a young boy. And of course, they're going to call him Ciro, which has been Mertens' official nickname since he joined Napoli and is even mentioned in his Wikipedia page. So congrats to both.
Yeah, I thought you were supposed to hold on to the name until the child was born, but maybe not.
Perhaps that superstition doesn't exist in either Naples or Belgium.
Yeah,
or
maybe
both.
Maybe not. Right, so talking about Naples, I've got an honourable. I've got a couple of honourables that are going in Naples' direction this week. The first one is for Spalletti. for some great footage that emerged on social media of him speaking to the ultras as Napoli were getting ready to set off for the Roma game. Basically, the ultras just kind of giving their full support and Spalletti coming out and speaking to them. And it was like, I don't know how to describe it. He was basically very, very serious and kind of rallying the troops and saying to them, you guys are very important, but the most important thing is the players. We have to look after the players. And I don't know, it was a bit weird. You've said before that Spalletti is a weird guy, and it was undoubtedly a bit weird, but there was also something quite magical. It kind of felt like something is happening there, you know? Kind of feels like he's trying to foster some magic there. So, yeah, honourable for me. Very unconventional, but enjoyable nonetheless.
And that comes off the back of the fact that the ultras are not attending games at the Maradona Stadium right now. They're all going to the game and standing outside of the stadium and singing, which seems a little bit counterintuitive to me. But but yeah, that's maybe Spalletti trying to get them on side.
Yeah, doing all he can. Boaz, you've got an honourable for, well, it comes from the Juniores, the Campeonato Juniores.
Usually when we dive into lower league football, it seems like we're usually presenting quite sad stories of racism and violence or people being punched. But this one is a sweet story, and I want to give an honorable to Lesna Gold captain Simone Davolio, who, when he saw that referee Angela Bonfrante was hit by a ball to the head in the dying minutes of their game and she collapsed and fainted, he immediately jumped to her assistance, having recently learned some first aid, and was able to help her and kind of make sure that she wasn't swallowing her tongue and stuff like that. So good on him, and clearly he's the captain for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Bravo.
Do your first aid training, guys. Right, so I said I had another honourable for Napoli, and the reason I'm giving Napoli an honourable is for their Halloween kit, which, Boaz, you give a preemptive dishonourable to without even having seen it. I quite liked it. When I actually saw it, I quite liked it. I had the spider webs about it, but that makes it sound absolutely disgusting. But I would recommend that those who didn't watch Napoli's game in midweek check it out, because I think it's a very smart kit. So, Boaz, you have an honourable for Serie A legends.
Yeah, this was a week where the likes of Del Piero, De Rossi, Vieri, Abate, Montolivo, Matri, Pazzini and David Pizarro all got their UEFA coaching license in the same class. Some of those players are superstars. Some of them are general names that will be familiar with anyone who follows Serie A. I particularly liked Daniele De Rossi's quote to the press, where he said, "The legendary UEFA A license has finally arrived. It enriches my wall, already full of awards, such as my my junior school diploma that's up there." It definitely stands out, he said, sparkling there with my other diplomas. So, good humor from De Rossi.
Nice one, yeah. It's time for my goals honorable, and there were lots of crackers to pick from this week, but I'm giving it to Iličić. This might be my bias coming out, but I think you have to kind of take this in, you know, the circumstances it was in the game. Atalanta were 2-1 up away to Sampdoria, last minute of injury time. Iličić got the ball running towards the corner, and everyone, I think even the commentators, said, oh, he'll run down the clock now. Certainly that's what the two Sampdoria defenders who were closing in on him thought, and he just absolutely sold them both. The dummy went up along the byline and smashed the ball in from a tight angle. So I think, given the fact that Iličić is coming back to form, he had a torrid time last season, I'm going to give him an honourable for that goal. And I'm going to tack on to an honourable for Gasperini reaching 200 games as Atalanta manager. Boaz, one more honourable left, and it's for, well, I'm not sure who it's for, but it involves a game between Athletic Carpi and Progresso.
Sometimes you couldn't write these things, you couldn't script these things, but manager Massimo Bagatti of Atletico Carpi was essentially sacked following their 1-1 draw with Progresso, what was particularly memorable about this game was that the equalizing goal was scored by the manager's son, Nicolò, who was later seen bawling his eyes out outside of the changing room, saying that he felt guilty for getting his dad fired, essentially. It's a weird twist of fate, and no one wants to get their dad fired unless perhaps they had some bad blood in the family. But I definitely think that the next Christmas dinner or whatever is going to be very interesting.
I think his dad actually said afterwards that he didn't do anything wrong. He just did what he was there to do. So
he just did his duty, which is what you would say to the press. But once you get home, maybe the belt comes out or something like that.
Oof, boss.
I don't know. I don't know what Mr. Bugatti's relationship with his son is. Okay. And more specifically, I don't know what it will be now.
Okay. Right, I think that seems like an appropriate place to end the episode. So, as ever, we're hoping that Oscar will be back. Apparently, at the end of his epic journey, he reaches the British shores on Wednesday next week. So hopefully he'll be back in time for next week's Scudetto. Until then, thank you, everybody, for listening. And as always, please do subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your audio if you don't subscribe already. Other than that, until next week, enjoy the football. La Roma è campione d'Italia per la stagione 2000-2001. Il titolo del 2008, l'Inter è campione d'Italia, 16° scudetto per la squadra. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.